Attention Austin guitarist, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's my friend Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the very best job, but he has the fastest service and the best prices in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic or electric, Jason is your guy. Get your guitars fixed. Hey gang, are you in a band in Austin and you're looking to make the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art, affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, wide gallery-lit corridors, and plenty of parking, Space is the place to do it. And also, during this pandemic, they have taken the safety measures that are needed. You have to bring your own microphones, but there's also like a one-way movement. There's a door you come in, a door you go out. They're practicing safety over there at Space. Just call them at 512-448-9518. That's 448-9518. Or go to spaceatx.com and take the talent train from Schmoesville to Protown with Space, rehearsal, and recording. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
When we talk. All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a good weekend. I saw my family in Houston. It would have been my grandfather's 100th birthday on Friday. So some of my family got together, a lot of vaccinated people, and me. And that was great. It was great to see the family and everything. And then Saturday, I played a show. I did. Exactly 1 year after my last show. The last show I played in front of people was March 13th, 2020. First show I played back was a wedding in Houston, March 13th, 2021. It was with Skyrocket, and if it was a choice, I probably wouldn't have done the show, because I don't want to be in a room full of people, but we had to do this. Like, it was something we had to do, and so we did it, and it was freaky. We're doing another one this Saturday, you know? You never know. Like, you know, all the drive home from Houston that night, I was just sitting there, like, you know, do I have the thing? Do I have the thing? When do you know that you have the thing, if you have the thing? I don't know, man. It's just weird, man. This pandemic thing is just, it's getting, that part of it is getting to me. I'm ready for life again, man. I've been, you know, trying to have the best time I can over the last couple of months and kind of live more than just hiding in my fucking room all day or here in my apartment and only going to the grocery store. There are safe places to go and there's safe ways to do it. I don't know if Saturday was the best way, but I had to do it. I didn't really have a choice. So I did it, man. And hopefully I'm safe. Hopefully you're safe. Hopefully we're all, you know, hopefully you're doing good. I mean, I know that all of us have been under incredible amounts of pressure for the last year. Incredible amounts of pressure, you know? I remember when they announced that South by Southwest was canceled. It was a mind fuck, you know? It took me down. It's like a thing that happens every year is just not going to happen anymore. It's supposed to be happening now. It's happening virtually. So hopefully that's good. I don't have a pass to it. I'm kind of tired of watching stuff on my computer. I have to for the show all the time, like watch, you know, people's videos and stuff and read all that stuff. But anyway, I hope you're doing good. I know that people are going stir crazy and they lifted that mask order. And now that bozo Bob Woody that has all those clubs on Sixth Street reopened all of his shit. I'm sure maskless, a bunch of people just licking doorknobs and fucking toilet handles and whatever they can get their face on. Anyway. I hope that you're being safe and you're practicing safety and you're doing all right. All right. I have a great show for you guys today, gang. Diana Burgess is on the show. Diana Burgess is a member of Mother Falcon. She has been for a very long time. She's a co-founder of Outreach Director and cello teacher for Mother Falcon Music Lab. Now, she has released her very first solo album. Diana Burgess' solo album is called You Run. It's out now. It was co-produced by the amazingly talented Curtis McMurtry. Now, Curtis was on the show like a month ago, and he talked about Diana Burgess. He ended up hooking us up, so I got to thank Curtis for this. So You Run is a fantastic record, man. It is gorgeous, and it's amazing. And Diana Burgess plays every instrument on the album. It's so worth listening to. She's a fantastic songwriter, such a great singer, such a great musician, such a fantastic composer. Those guys have this like classical music edge that you can't. I mean, I'm 52. What am I going to become a composer now? I'd like to. If I was 20 again, maybe I'd go to school. I don't know. Maybe you can be one. I don't know. Is there YouTube classes? That's the thing, is you really got to commit to doing this at some point in your life. And I don't have time to commit my whole life to learning that stuff. Why am I complaining about this? They didn't do this to me. Diana Burgess is an amazingly talented woman. She played everything on her album, You Run. You can find her at dianaburgessmusic.com. And she does Thursdays at 8 p.m. with Curtis McMurtry on Instagram and Facebook. So just go to dianaburgessmusic.com for all of your Diana Burgess needs. And without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Diana. She is such a fantastic person to talk to and such an amazing musician. I was very honored to get to have that talk with her. So here she is, Diana Burgess. Let's get down. Doing
pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm good on one level. I'm great, but I'm real tired. Yeah. And I feel like that's a general thing going on with people. And there's a general,
yeah, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, there's a sense of confusion after this whole whatever that was.
Yeah, whatever happened last week.
Yeah, and then it was 80, and then you're starting to get like, oh man, all those articles I've been reading for the last few years where they're like, it's too late. There's nothing we can do. We're going down.
It's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fun stuff for sure.
Yeah. How are you doing?
You know, yeah, about the same.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's really great to have you on. And listen, man, what a treat. Yeah. Your record is just, it's gorgeous. It's
Thank
really
you.
Unbelievable.
Appreciate yeah. it.
Do you call this orchestral pop? Because I noticed that they use that label for Mother Falcon, but you didn't use it for yours. And I'm like, well, wait, it's kind of similar.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sold on like any of those terms, really, like chamber pop, orchestral right. pop. But I don't know how to describe it otherwise. So, yeah. Yes.
Labels are weird, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Does a label like that make it difficult for a record like You Run to have an avenue that it can go down just because you don't know what to call it?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I am asked about it, I just like to start listing the instruments and talking about the songs, because that's what it defines it as, rather than
sure,
any specific
sure.
genre. You know. Yeah.
Well, there's a world that you and your collaborator, Curtis McMurtry, who I had on and who was nice enough to introduce us. Have we met before?
I don't think so.
I never interviewed you in an alley.
Oh, maybe.
I'm trying to think who it was in Mother Falcon that I talked. It was a long time ago.
Probably wasn't me. Okay. I usually wasn't one of the
interview people?
The people to be okay. interviewed.
All right. Well, this record's gorgeous. And when I see something that sort of defies genre and is just super, is more creative and it's unique in a way, but then all of a sudden I start thinking, like, well, does the most beautiful music being made get lost in a sea of people with little boxes that light up? Which is, there's nothing wrong with that. That's super cool. But what, like, your trip is so organic. And, you know, the instruments are, you played all the instruments on the record, too.
I did, yeah.
You're a badass. You're like the...
I'm also cheap. Just kidding. I was going to get, you know, maybe like a violinist or a violist. And then Curtis, who co-produced it with me, was like, I mean, you're almost already playing all the instruments anyway. Why don't you just go for it and just... You're almost there. Just make that a thing. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
So. Well, it's a pretty badass thing to do. And also it's a liberating thing to do, isn't it? In a way.
Definitely. Yeah. I think, you know, since I'm used to a band like Mother Falcon, which has 13 other people.
Right.
This was definitely my chance to have control over everything, which was nice. Although now in these days of lockdown, I definitely miss that collaborative songwriting experience. But while I was making this album, I was like, yes, okay, I finally have, you know, the space to just do everything that I want to do.
Yeah. So, okay. How long have you been in Mother Falcon since the inception?
A couple years into it, but I've been in it for... Oh gosh, since like 2010. So okay. I guess 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I was in high school at the time.
Wow. You know, It's funny, when I first saw you guys, the same thing happened to me that happened to me when I saw Polyphonic Spree for the first time 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Was as a musician and a band leader too, was just like, how in the fuck do they get everyone together to rehearse? Like, what?
Yeah, it's insane.
How does this happen? How do they get to a gig?
Yeah. by a miracle, really.
Yeah.
Touring was so fun. I mean, in the moment, I don't know if I would have called it fun, but looking back, it's like, wow, it's funny how that was my touring experience.
Yeah.
Which is like, not like anybody else.
No.
This touring experience, it's like, oh, so you guys don't just like all, you know, like four people to a bed and like sneak into hotel rooms and because you can't pay for all of them, and you know just when you go into a restaurant like a Waffle House, you just take up the entire restaurant. Like, that's not your normal tour experience. Like, what? So I realize that I have a very unique, interesting perspective on touring with that experience.
You guys were so young. Was there someone out there with you that was a more experienced human?
Yeah, maybe I don't know, whoever was 25 at the time.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. We spanned maybe like 8 years in age, from like the oldest to young, maybe 10 years. I don't know. But we're all still very much kids.
Yeah. And you guys have kind of changed your thing over the last, I don't know how many years, but into a more of an education thing, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So this is actually the 10th season of our summer camp.
Okay.
So it's been going on, you know. Lab? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
And no, you're good. So that started, you know, kind of soon after the band. So it's been part of us for a long time. And it's definitely been the thing that's been easiest to keep enough people on board and interested in it. And we also don't just employ people from Mother Falcon. We've got, you know, members of other bands in Austin that are our teachers and collaborators. So it's definitely a cool community to keep things going.
Yeah. All right. So you do Mother Falcon for so long, and then you wrote all of these songs on your own as well, right? Have mm-hmm. you been writing songs for a long time? Because this is a while to put out. I mean, you know, you've been in it a while to put out a solo album, like your debut solo mm-hmm. album.
Yeah, I actually made a record when I was 16 with my little high school band called the Apple Trio. We were very much chamber pop. I would definitely say that.
Even at 16.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, go ahead.
I was very determined. I was like, I want to make this record. It was very, you know, we took 3 days to record it and did a trade for paying for the studio time. And, you know, but it was still really great. We got to record. I don't know if you know Tim Dittmar at all.
I know that name. Oh, no, I do know Tim.
Yeah. I don't know if he still teaches at ACC, but anyway, he was very gracious and recorded us and, you know, kind of taught us how to be in a recording studio. Because at that age, you're just like, woo, you know, fun times. So yeah, I had been writing songs kind of starting like freshman year of high school and formed that band the year after. And that was kind of my high school project. Going into college, I was studying cello performance and really touring a lot with Mother Falcon. So those were definitely kind of my limits for creativity there. So I definitely put my songwriting aside. And really the songs on this album, some of them were written like 7 years ago. So it kind of just came together with any of the things that I had. It's not like I have a big catalog of songs. I just finally had enough for a record and it's like, okay, yeah, it's time.
How did you and Curtis choose the songs or did you have more? So it's 12 songs.
Not really.
Right? Yeah, it's 12 songs. You didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of what I had, which is kind of embarrassing. I don't know. Most people have like, you know, an actual choice in it, but I think it worked out to where they, you know, we're all connected thematically, at least to a point. And I think it worked out. Like it doesn't sound like a jumbled bit of.
No, not at all. No, it sounds like a very cohesive piece of work. Do you want to talk about what the theme is?
Yeah, so I'd say it's kind of half songs that are very disconnected from my personal experience. So writing from character, writing about really intense emotions, things that I have never experienced, like divorce, assisted suicide, alcoholism, you know, very intense things that, again, I was just writing from character. And then
real quick, what made you choose, like, what were those, like, what made you get into that headspace? Is there a cat behind you or there's a shadow
there
of
is
a cat?
Cat
that's so cute?
There is a cat.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So what made you, what made you want to write about divorce or alcoholism or assisted suicide?
It's not like I really wanted to. It's just kind of what happened. I definitely feel like it's much easier to write things just with those really intense, kind of darker emotions.
Right. More of an operatic kind of.
Yeah. And I have a very specific kind of cheesy threshold where if I try to write like a very like passionate love song or something more uplifting, it just makes me cringe for myself. I think other people can do it beautifully, but I don't think I can.
I know exactly what you mean. It's you know? Like this weird gate where like, that's not what you want to show people.
Yeah. If I was good, I mean, maybe I could do it in another realm, but you know, at least for this, it's just easier to kind of write about those more intense, emotions.
Yeah. I wonder, let me ask you this. Is it because are you like a person who does a lot of deep dives into your own stuff?
I wouldn't say so. I kind of avoid conflict, to be honest. So maybe this is a way of like exploring that in a different way.
Yeah. Maybe this is really healthy therapy for you.
Yeah, maybe.
Like 10
it
years,
is.
You're going to look back and be like, look at all the money I saved.
Yeah, right.
Well, I didn't hire a fucking band for the record. That's one way.
Yeah, right?
I worked out my problems.
Yeah. So much money saved.
So tell me more about some of the other songs. What is the song you run about? Because that's the song I feel like I connected most as like I'm a pop guy, but you know, I'm a pop guy. That's not a bad thing to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That song was originally called Sassy Song. I wait until the last minute to name my song, so I just kind of, you know, just name it the first thing that comes to mind, and that's what it's called until I have to make a name for it. So yeah, that was Sassy Song for a long time. I think that's kind of more one of the relationship songs on the record. You know, just feeling like you have this connection with somebody, but then realizing they don't actually know you and you've really been wasting your time. Yeah.
And that never happened
to
you?
That's what that one's about. No, it did. Okay. That one was real.
I wonder if that's why I connected with that song. Or maybe it's the hook. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm trying to figure you out. Like, who is this Diana Burgess?
Me too.
Yeah. your palette then, musically... Yeah, your palette musically is so it's so broad, and you cover so much so minimally on this record. You know what I mean? With minimal mm-hmm. tracks, were there any sort of like parameters you guys put on? You first of all, what was Curtis's role in this whole thing? To keep you from freaking out?
Yes, he definitely helped me with a lot of the just revising the lyrics. I mean, all the lyrics are my own, but he definitely helped me with kind of that breaking down process and editing through and making sure I was really choosing each word with intention. And so he's just an amazing lyricist. So it was really wonderful to kind of have that guidance. You know, he was also kind of part vocal coach helping me with addiction, which is still something I got to work on, but you know, and it was kind of like I wanted him to be part of the process anyway. So it's like, well, you should just be co-producer, you know, whatever that means in this situation.
Yeah.
Just, you know, we help each other with each other's music, and it just kind of made sense. So,
well, I feel like you really added a lot to his record too. Like, you know, you're very brilliant. Where did you guys do this record?
Estuary.
Okay.
Which is on like 51st and Airport.
Right. What, I mean, how long did it take you to do that stuff? Had you worked it out kind of at home before? Like the parts, like did you demo those songs mm-hmm. in kind of the way that they came out?
Yeah, because I, you know, playing every instrument myself, I really had to think about, you know, all the different cello parts. And so I would just do demos on GarageBand and just keep kind of adding layers. And then I had the parts, you know, pretty much solidified before going into the studio.
Right, right.
Yeah, I really don't like just figuring things out in the studio. I like to just know what I'm doing.
That, I think that's a dream that went away like in the maybe the 80s, early 90s might have been less. Like you'd read these articles about people like, oh, Roxy Music's in the studio writing a new record. You're like
writing a record. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh my god, how much money
like
do you have?
$1,500 a day.
Jeez. Yeah, like which still would be, yeah, like cheap comparably. But
so did you had you put parameters on it, or you just kind of went with what you had done, like on the demos?
Yeah, I didn't really set any deadlines for myself. I mean, we were recording this kind of between everything else that I had going on. So right. It was definitely a long process.
Right.
Even a couple of the like plucked cello tracks were from 2014. So I kind of just really was adding things throughout. But I mean, most of it came to fruition like 2018, 2019 was when we really amped up going into the studio, but we would have 6 months between studio dates.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, just kind of in between tours and work and everything else.
Can I ask you a weird question? What's your aspiration for this record? Like, is this the kickstart of like the Diana Burgess vehicle? Is this the first car on the train?
I definitely had to reframe my expectations, you know, once 2020 started.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of released it in June, technically. And really, it was just, it was done. I wanted it out there. I had been sitting on it for so long. And I just needed it out there. And so I wasn't, you know, wasn't really trying to do, I didn't want to overwhelm myself with publicity. And I know how expensive and how insane that can get. And it's so hard, you know, knowing that you can't tour it. So it's like, how much publicity should I really do knowing that I'm still just going to be sitting at home, you know? So it's not like I really imagined this to be like, you know, a big splash kind of thing, but it was mainly for myself. But you know, also kind of a way to finally have something that was my own that I can be like, yes, I do have a somewhat of a solo career. Here's the thing. Here are some songs.
Yeah. Do you feel like now that, you know, you're at least a little more than a half a year after releasing it, do you feel like there's, have you been writing for another one? Do you have another slew of demos? And are you thinking of in that headspace?
I definitely want to make the next thing. You know, and there's a lot that I would do differently. But I'm really glad for what I made previously, just making it very, very organic and cello centered. But you know, definitely for the next thing, I want more percussion and probably not just myself.
That's what the body is credited as in the.
Yeah. I mean, I did do some percussion on my body and on the cello. Yeah. But it'd be nice to have an actual percussionist do that stuff.
Yeah. I could see how that would feel. I feel like it's such a great statement. Artistically, you and Curtis both have released these records this year that just have this musicality to them that I don't really hear very much coming through here. I mean, I don't hear it at all. Like, there's just not, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I've had string sections. I had a guy, you know, arrange some stuff and have Tosca come on. But these are way mm-hmm. more than that, these records, especially yours is so... It starts with that. It's not like you made a record and then brought in some string shit. It's like everything mm-hmm. that's driving it. Like even the percussion is when you're plucking the bass, plucking the cello and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want it to be very organic and just wood sounding.
Yeah.
Cello is such a big part of my life. I started playing when I was 5. So, you know, most of my life. And having dived so deep into the classical world, you know, doing my degree in cello performance was amazing, but that was not the world that I wanted to end up in ultimately.
Right.
But it was still, that instrument is still so important to me and just like so much part of myself that I really wanted it represented. And, you know, part of the thing I love about Mother Falcon, why I was immediately attracted to it was, the cello was the lead instrument. It wasn't just like a rock band with some cellos. It was like, no, the cello is the rock band.
Right,
you
right.
know? Yeah.
Before we delve into your life and growing up and your connection to music and stuff, I wanted to say one more thing that I thought really stood out is the choice of the cello and then using like baritone guitar. So that way when you bring in something funky, like is there a banjo? Banjo.
Yeah. So it's tenor banjo and tenor guitar.
Okay.
Which are tuned exactly like the cello.
Oh.
So I can play them. I can kind of play guitar, but once I discovered that these are instruments, they're four strings tuned in fifths. I was like, oh my God, I can just do my cello chords. I don't have to learn a new instrument. So I was just obsessed with that. I was like, oh my gosh, now I know three instruments, you know? And I definitely really love those kind of textures.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the Punch Brothers, and just having the intricacy of guitar and banjo with a bowed string
right.
is just really nice for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sonically, like on the spectrum, when that banjo comes in, just the tonality and brightness of it, it really mm-hmm. it really speaks. Yeah, it's a beautiful room.
And yeah, it's a voice, nice contrast.
Yeah. Yeah. Your voice is framed really beautifully in there too, because there's not an onslaught of stuff coming through, mm-hmm. you know? Great job, by the way.
Yeah.
Again, sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of like the Prince and the Stevie Wonder records he did on his own, where he played all this. It's just that kind of that sort of. I don't know if people should make them all the time, but even like the first Foo Fighters record was like that, you know, and it was cool. Yeah, there's like a really nice feelings, like a, you can almost hear the person's wheels turning, and then you really get a sense of like what if you dig someone's feel and they're the way that they express, then all the instruments feel amazing, you know, and I feel like you got that across on this record.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just hope to.
So are you born and raised here?
I am. I'm a unicorn.
Do you like one of like five people?
Yeah.
Your dad is in the Eggmen?
He is.
How cool is that? I've seen them.
Very cool.
I saw a picture of him. I know which guy he is.
Yeah, he's John. His name is John.
John. And he
he plays John. Okay. When I was little, so the Eggmen have been around
long time.
They started 1 month before I was born. So
like mid-90s or something?
Mm-hmm. Early 90s. And when I was little, I remember hearing Beatles songs, and I would ask my parents, like, okay, so is that the Beatles or was that the Eggmen? Because in my mind, it was just like, I don't know, my dad's in the Beatles, right? Or I don't know, who are these Beatles? Who's the Eggman?
Right.
It was just one thing. Yeah.
How did that music affect you?
That really provided me such a great, really performance opportunity when I was younger. And, you know, the Eggman have been such a part of my family. I mean, my dad is in it. My two uncles are in it, too, or, you know, used to be. So I think it was third grade. My dad was like, oh, we should figure out some of the cello parts that are in some of the kind of more psychedelic Beatles songs for you to play with us. And I was like, okay. And I was like really bad, you know, I was just starting to read music. So we just, you know, I think we started with Strawberry Fields. Uh-huh. We put it on the boombox and just listened to it over and over again. And he kind of helped me pick out what the notes were. And I was always kind of playing from ear ever since I started playing. It got me in trouble a lot.
Yeah.
Where I would just mimic what my teacher played and they'd be like, wait, you're not reading the music, are you? I was like,
I love how that's frowned upon in that world.
I know, right? Like,
it's weird.
It has helped now, but at first it was like, it was very, it was bad. But so we would figure out the cello parts. And I think the first time I played with the Eggmen was in third grade. And I remember I got to go play on the radio with them on John Ailey's show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to like miss school and I got to like come in after my gig in third grade. And I just felt so cool. Yeah. So that was definitely kind of my first taste of like being on stage. And it was so comfortable because it was with my dad, you know?
Yeah.
And then my brother started playing upright bass a few years later. And then he would also play. So it'd be, you know, little mainstream section.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think my friend, Darren Murphy, do you know him?
Yeah, Darren Murphy.
Mm-hmm. He plays with them sometimes, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wears so many hats. He's kind of their go-to. Do sub, so he can. I think he's subbed for bass and drums and maybe guitar. You know, like he can do everything.
There was this. Yeah. I don't think your dad and those guys were part of this, which is weird now that I think about it. But there used to be these. You know, Stephen Doster does those Beatle nights. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He's been doing them like, you know, since the early '90s and stuff, and. One time I was doing one and it was me and a couple of guys that are, you know, cool guys, but we couldn't figure out a couple of things. So I was like, let me call this dude. Darren had just moved to town. And I was like, I know this guy from Houston. He knows it's going to kind of fucking blow your mind because he is like, there's nothing he doesn't know. And so he came and he taught us all, like I was like, hey, can you rehearse tomorrow? And I was like, hey, guys, don't even bother learning the song. This guy's gonna school us
he's
all.
He's got it.
Yeah, he's got it. And he did. He came in and taught us all the instruments, all of our parts.
That's amazing.
All right, so your mom, I saw a photo of her when I was creeping on your Instagram that she looks cool playing bass in a photo. So what
sorry, you cut out for a second. Yes. My mom.
Your mom, yeah.
Yes. She has a secret past life. She would hate me saying this. No, I'm just kidding. She was in a all-girl punk band in the 80s here in Austin.
No way. What were they called?
They were called the Foams.
I don't know them, but that's cool.
Apparently she said they had like 5 gigs total, but I think they even opened for like Velvet Underground at some point. They'd play at Raoul's and I don't know. Chances, maybe.
Yeah, Chances, baby. Yeah. I used to play there when
It's hilarious. That's what Chirp Charlie's is now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a picture of my mom playing there, and she's like, 8 months pregnant with my brother, and she's playing bass on the side, and my dad was doing lights, and they were kind of not looking down at her, but they're like, oh, like you're a breeder, who's the father?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, John on the lights. They're like, oh, he's fine. That's cool. You're cool, you know. and it's so funny because my brother does sound. And he's worked at Cheer Ups for ages.
Oh,
so
really?
He was like literally on that stage in the womb, and now he works there. Yeah.
That is awesome. What? Mm-hmm. That is so cool.
Full circle.
Yeah. And also what cool kids you are, you know?
Yeah. Definitely following in our parents' footsteps.
Yeah. Are you guys still really close? Everyone's cool?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing having a brother who's a sound engineer, especially in a band like Mother Falcon, where I could be like, okay, so we got this gig and nobody else wants to deal with us, so can you come and deal with all this crazy, all the mics, all the DPAs, and he's always happy to do it.
Do you know offhand how many inputs Mother Falcon needs when they go to a thing?
I think at least 24.
Okay. So it's not quite Polyphonic Spree, but it's you guys have what, 14?
Almost.
14 people?
Yeah, at one point we had 17.
It was a show. The show that I saw was at Mercury during South by Mercury. Southwest during the day, the Mercury Lounge.
What is the Mercury Lounge? I don't even remember.
It's on 6th Street. It's upstairs.
Okay.
Oh, no, it's not called that anymore. Shit. I'm old.
I probably
parish.
Wouldn't even remember.
It was at the parish.
Oh, okay. Yes.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I had a handheld recorder, and it was like the first year I was doing the podcast, and two of you awesome. Went down into the alley with me. And we
gotcha.
All we did was talk about how creepy it was that I just saw like a teenage band playing and took them into an alley to talk to them.
An alley. Well, when you asked me earlier, like, have I interviewed you in an alley? My first thought was like the parish alley, because I felt like I spent so much time there. So that's funny. So maybe it was me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Never know.
Okay. So you start cello at 5, you grow up, you sit in with the Eggmen and stuff. Oh, wait, real quick. Your mom, she doesn't jam anymore.
She jams in a different way. Okay. She is an audio archivist, which is super cool. So she teaches audio preservation at UT.
What?
And yeah, she's badass. And she is the archivist at the LBJ Library. So she has digitized all of his speeches, all of Lady Bird's diaries. She's been there for maybe 15 years now. So she's kind of, it's really funny. It's like me and my dad are definitely the more performance, type musicians. Right. And then my mom and my brother are like all in the tech stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll speak in this like totally different language. And me and my dad are just like, what are y'all doing? So she's still very musical, but just in the tech side.
Your dad hasn't gotten tired of playing Beatles songs. The Beatles didn't even play their songs as much as Eggmen have.
No, and sometimes I'm surprised he still listens to them like every day.
Really? I'm always surprised about that with Darren too.
Me too. I'm just like, okay, like I get it, but I got to take a break.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting what a legacy and just what a omnipresent and just like they never go away. It seems like they only get stronger and more powerful. Right?
Yeah. And that's kind of the success that the Eggmen had found, where it's like little kids love them and their grandparents love them. You know, everybody, like it's does not matter how old you are, you know, where you come from in life.
Well, it's funny because, you know, there's not there, you know, there's that kind of thing with maybe some other bands from that era, but not like at that level. It's not like, you know,
universally
everybody loves the Birds. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even Elvis is not that.
It doesn't seem like it, does it?
Yeah. Seems like he could have, but not, you know.
To me, Elvis's legacy, and this is really sad, I think unless people connect to his music, his legacy to me is this, like, a person that has a bunch of Marilyn Monroe shit in their room.
Mm-hmm.
Or James Dean shit. They've never seen one of their movies.
Classic.
It's a photo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That looks cool.
Yeah.
You know, and it looks so cool. You're like,
yeah. He's like an icon, but not like a full on musical inspiration.
Right.
Like,
which he is to me, but you know.
Yeah. No, I don't mean to just be like shitting on Elvis. Sorry.
That's all right. A lot of people do. Remember Public Enemy? They had a line in one of their songs that said, "Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant shit to me." all right, yep. I'm getting off topic. so you do all that stuff. When did you start sort of like getting into your own music thing? Was it in that band when you were 16?
Yeah, in high school. I mean, ever since I was little, you know, definitely looking up to my dad, I wanted to be in a band. And especially being a girl, you know, really wanting that kind of power. And I, oh my God, I love Josie and the Pussycats. Like that was like peak inspiration for a bit. you know, I would make up band names and band logos, and I wouldn't write songs, but I would do everything else.
You know, that's how you start.
Little, like draw a little. Yeah, sure. Exactly. Like little bio, you know.
But,
yeah, it was finally in high school where I was like, okay, I think I can do this. I want to do it. And I am surrounded by people who, you know, have the same interests and would definitely support me. And I went to McCallum High School, which was like the cool fine arts academy. And so there was definitely a great environment where there's, you know, we had coffee shop performances and different, just lots of different outlets for that.
That's really cool.
Very encouraging environment. Yeah.
Yeah. And Austin in that sort of realm, and probably you're like, you know, I had the kind of mom that seems like your parents, that their group of friends would like a guy at your house having dinner would teach you a bunch of shit on piano or guitar or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love the era that I grew up in, kind of being a teenager in Austin, where Margaret Moser was really like the mama of all these under 18 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, so, I mean, she helped out so much. I was kind of on the younger side of that. Although I don't know, there's kind of a few mini generations in that, but, you know, just having that support of, and just that recognition, you know, the shows at Ruta Maya that were like the under 18 shows, and I don't know, just all different things. It seemed like it was like, okay, this is possible. It's not just like, you know, just kid shit, like teen rock night. It was so much more than that.
No. And you know, And I guess even the kids that are just behind you, like William Harris Graham, she helped him start that thing. He had NOM. Remember when he was a kid and he had that thing at Maria's Tacos?
I don't remember.
It was like every week. Anyway, it was great. So how did you end up in Mother Falcon? How did that whole thing?
So kind of my best cello friend, Laura Andrade, we started cello together when we were five. So we had known each other forever. And she was in the band kind of through her older sister. And I, you know, would tell her like, God, okay, if they ever need another cellist, like call me. She's like, yeah, I definitely, like, you're first on the list. So it was definitely kind of like waiting and kind of creeping on them, like, oh my God, I really want to be in this band. But not knowing how, you know, I wasn't confident enough to just like walk up to them because, you know, I was a good 3-4 years younger than everybody. But finally, there was a time where she called me to fill in for just a sound check for like an album release. So it was very awkward where I did get to, you know, play with them, do the sound check, like at Music Lab, but then I didn't actually play the release show. No. And I kind of just like waited out where I was just like, you know, that they had my number and I was like, they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you should, it was such a, it's such a weird kind of free flow environment where it's like, yeah, you should come play a show. And it's like, okay, but do you want me at this show? What date is it? You know, it's like, there was none of that. It was just very much like, yeah, yeah, you know? And so a few months went by of kind of an awkward, like, am I in it? Am I out of it? And then I just kind of started coming and it just kind of went from there.
That's great.
So, yeah.
Do you do live streams now as Diana Burgess, like to promote your thing?
Yeah. So Curtis and I kind of do like a song swappy kind of thing. It's not that folky, but, you know, where we play both of our songs. We try to do it every Thursday at 8:00. Give or take. Sometimes we skip a week, but, we've been trying to do that.
Where would one see this
tonight? It's always on Curtis's music page. So the Curtis McMurtry Facebook page.
Okay.
And also his Instagram. So we do it through his channels, but we play both of our songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell people to go see that.
Yeah.
Go watch that. All right. So are you cool if we start recording now?
Yes. Let's go. Now I'm warmed up.
I've never done that to anyone before.
That's funny.
And I'm like over 1,000 podcasts. I've always wanted to do it. I never knew if it would be appropriate. And I was like, it would be pretty left fieldy right now. Especially because I feel like you seem like you're probably a little bit more of a private person. So I do appreciate you opening up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, this is fun.
Good. Because, people shy away from this stuff. So what's next for you? Like, are you guys doing any stuff, the virtual South by Southwest? Are you doing anything for that or anything?
No, to be honest, I've played, you know, the last 10 South Bys, and it used to be such a different experience. It was such a blast in like early college, and just there was just a lot more free stuff, a lot less company, and I don't know, just it was just better. Which I know is funny because I'm sure it was better, you know, 20 years ago. But from my experience, like 10 years ago was great. That was when South By was at its peak. So I, you know, when we heard it was virtual, I think you could defer your showcase for 2022. So we just did that because, like, I don't want to even deal with
because you'd be
with the virtual.
Right. I was talking to someone and they said that they filmed their set in Trinity. It's not like an actual.
Those things are like,
how do you feel about live streams now that we're a year into it?
It's much better than I initially thought.
Do you watch a lot though?
You know, I feel, I don't actually.
Yeah.
I just kind of do them. I mean, it depends. If there's somebody I really like, that sounds bad, but.
No, it doesn't.
Hang
on. I don't want to interrupt you, but all of us have the same answer to that.
Yeah, I don't actually go see music. No, but I do like kind of the casual nature of it.
Yeah.
Where you're obviously still performing, but you're literally in your bedroom. And I feel like for me and Curtis, we've been able to kind of, I mean, I feel like I'm almost like half comedy act.
Yeah.
You know, I think and like you have the space to do that.
Yeah. I feel like that's what you have to do to get like, otherwise,
watching
someone be serious and like with a static camera on them that doesn't move for however long they're doing this.
Silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Curtis has kind of noticed like, seems like what people are doing, kind of people younger than us, they don't even play a full song. They'll just kind of play, you know, the main part of the song and then just kind of start talking and tell a story for like 10 minutes and then come back. And like, they end up playing for maybe like 5 minutes throughout the whole thing, but it's almost more just like a medley with like a lot of stories in between, which is kind of a cool format. You know, it's definitely hard to get used to, but it's, you know, I think we've gotten kind of into a groove of it. We started doing these live streams maybe in May or April, you know, pretty early, which I'm glad that we kind of just dove in.
Yeah.
Cause now it's here to stay. So.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually, there's Skyrocket, the band I'm in with Darren. We have like two weddings next month, which is weird.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I haven't played a show to an audience since March 13th.
Yeah. Yeah. Super weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do miss it.
It's Mother Falcon can't even get together and rehearse with like some of the guidelines.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's true. It's like, oh, that's already like over 10 people. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So when you perform this stuff, you don't have like a group of your own, like, cause I saw Curtis was playing and he had a trio and you and another person were in that trio. So I imagine that mm-hmm. you're doing Curtis's jams at that point, right?
Yeah. Like with the trio, that would be all Curtis's songs.
Right. But with your thing, mm-hmm. if they want to see you, it's a song swap with Curtis.
Yeah, he accompanies me though. Okay. So it's definitely been really hard to figure out my live set with this album and with this set of songs because it's all me and I am not competent enough to do a loop station deal. And I like that, but I don't want to be the looping string player because there's
enough of them.
And some people are great at it and yes, you know, but there is enough. And my songs aren't, when you have a looping string player, their songwriting is in the looping style where it's like, it builds up, you know, and it's got this, and that's just not how I write songs. And I don't want to cater to that. So I kind of wish that I could have some kind of pre-recorded things I could just stomp on and then they would come in, but I just don't want to deal with that.
You wouldn't bring other people to play the stuff outside of Curtis and one other person. Seems like you could do that.
Yeah. I was thinking of getting my friend Katie, who plays viola, because you know it's tuned the same as the cello, so she could easily do kind of some of the cello parts. And
right.
I definitely miss the harmonies and like the background parts that I can't physically play while I'm singing.
Right.
You know, I think maybe for some people it's not as important as like just the lyrics and the bass line, but for me it's like, oh no, but there's this cello part that's like the main part of the song.
I do have to say I wouldn't mind seeing you play by yourself at all, but I think in an ideal setting would be like you and however many mm-hmm. people it takes to mm-hmm. do this live, but not many, like three or four more people.
Yeah,
up to four mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah like it could still be a little stripped down, but I definitely would love to be able to represent the arrangements more rather than just being the solo cello girl, but you know, do what we gotta do.
Well,
and Curtis is able to cover a lot of those parts, you know, so it definitely works for live streams.
What a great how long have you guys known each other, you and Curtis?
Seven, 8 years.
You grew up in the
funny,
same
thing. We went to the thing. Same. Yeah, we actually went to the same middle school, but we didn't know each other. Huh. And we were in kind of rival high schools, and we actually shared a violinist between us. So the violinist in my high school band also played with him. So that was kind of our connection. And then, yeah, it's kind of like late college that we started playing together.
Yeah. It seems like a very mm-hmm. symbiotic relationship, like you guys are both coming from the same place musically, and like it's almost mm-hmm. like you're the only two people doing that. I'm glad you found each other.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else I'm missing that you want to say before we go? It's been really nice talking to you and getting to know
you. Yeah, you too. Yeah, this is really fun. Human connection, you know, somewhat.
In this way, yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah.
We can both be wearing pajama bottoms while doing this, and it's fine. I'm not. I'm wearing jeans.
Yeah, exactly.
You have connections to to all the Mother Falcon stuff, it's easy if you just go to DianaBurgessMusic.com. People can connect with all of your stuff there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even Curtis.
I'm big on the Bandcamp thing.
Me too.
Me and Curtis like to shit on Spotify all the time because I'm not a fan, and way more musicians, especially our age, need to realize how amazing Bandcamp is. And it's a strange thing that we've been fighting, where we've been telling our friends, like, dude, you got to get your stuff on Bandcamp. You'll get paid. This is how much money we've made from it. And it's almost like they don't think it's cool. I don't know what the barrier is, but people are still just like all about, no, I got to get the streams, the number of streams on Spotify. And it's like, I don't even use Spotify. I'm so against it. I mean, it's a great tool for some things, but
I feel like Bandcamp right now is the cool for the underground people. I think it's like cool. The punk rock or indie. It's like the indie label of whatever. And Spotify is like, you know, there's people that want to be in everyone's reach more than take some kind of stance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really just the amount of support you get from Bandcamp is insane, you know, monetarily and otherwise. But
yeah, I feel like we're in this place right now where it's a lot different. I'm 52 and I came up playing music in bands from when I was 14 and, like, you know, made a living doing it since, you know, 1993. And and it's engagement with people, the way that people engage with music is much more transient, much more passive. People aren't getting, like, there are music fans. I'm just saying, like, people in general, music used to be very important to them, and mostly because there wasn't a lot else going on. But music was your identity. Right. Like, I am dressed in this way because I love this band, and this is what they represent. You see that guy over there wearing the sweater? That's my dude. You know what I mean? We're in the same thing.
Yeah.
I've never met him, but he's the best friend I ever had because we both have this passion for this thing. And I feel like when people do these things like Patreon, or they get involved with something like Bandcamp, they're people that actually are engaging, because I think that it's moved into, like with social media, it's moved into such a thing that people don't have to listen to something. They can just like it. As it goes by, and then I got involved with Diana's thing. I pushed the button, and it was a heart. So
I'm supporting it.
I'm supporting
you. I did the thing. Yeah.
So it's a different thing. I wonder. Yeah. I wonder what if there'll be like if like that whole like rock and roll and like people buying records and collecting records and identifying with the band and having a person, not just the person, but their music speaks to them too. Cause that's another thing too. Cause like BTS is the biggest thing, but that's people connecting with, you know, the typical sort of like manufactured pop thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. I definitely like the, I guess what's considered old school way of doing it. I mean, I made CDs.
Yeah.
That was probably a really poor decision, but I wanted to have the physical thing, and then you get the artwork, and to me that makes it real. Like, anybody can put music online, but I don't know, for me it's just like the CD, which most people are like, haha, you know, even like people in their 60s, my parents' age, are like, yeah, I don't have a CD player. It's like, okay. Well, I do, but oh well.
What about coasters?
They make great coasters, you know?
Make a deal, like a bundle deal, where if you buy four of them, you get a deal. You have a set for Diana Burgess.
A set of coasters. Perfect on your dining room table. Yeah.
Are you going to put this on vinyl at all?
I don't know.
Seems like it would be kind of dreamy on the vinyl, huh? I know. That's the problem. You know this guy, have you ever heard of Austin Signal? They used to sponsor the show, but he does like one-off if you want to do it. It's like $30, but you can have your own copy of your record
on
vinyl.
Cool.
Yeah.
That would be cool. There are some places that do kind of like a pre-order thing where they'll only make the amount that you know you're going to sell, or like that you get money for up front, which is definitely, I think, kind of the only way to do it. Otherwise, you're going to spend like $3,000 and
Right, but the price point forever. On those, like those records have to sell for a lot of money.
Like $30. Yeah, yeah. I know. So it's good. You got to have the people to buy them lined up before you even do that.
Well,
Mother Falcon always had a, everybody wants vinyl, and we, you know, none of us ever made money really throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just because our overhead was insane, you know.
I wasn't ever even going to ask that just because I was like, how do y'all do thing? Yeah. Have you been around so long as like America's, Texas's biggest, well, not biggest, because I guess Polyphonic Spree still has you beat. But
yeah,
how do you stay like sustained? But that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Well, through your education stuff and grants, I remember talking to someone when you guys did the thing with Gina Chavez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody from the band came on with her on the show. And I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. She's played a couple of our like fundraisers and different things.
Yeah. All right. Once again, You Run is out now. You can get it on CD if needed. Available mm-hmm. on CD. I'll
ship it to you.
Yeah, so ship it to you. There you go. What an amazing thing. Constant, you'll get a package in the mail. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's been the
I know, right? Yeah, packages. I also have tote bags.
Okay, tote bags. You got the merch. Everybody if people go to DianaBurgessMusic.com, they can get involved there and definitely go to the Bandcamp and pick up the album and check Diana playing with Curtis McMurtry, trading the songs Thursday nights at 8 p.m. on Instagram and Facebook. That's Curtis McMurtry's Instagram and Facebook. People that are listening. Grandma. Just joking. great talking to you and great getting to know you. Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much for doing this. Yeah. I'm excited.
Me too. Diana Burgess, what a fantastic conversation, man. What an amazing artist. What a great talk, man. I really, really enjoyed talking to her. You can find her album, You Run, wherever it is you stream and download your jams or download your jams. DianaBurgessMusic.com is her website. You can go there and find out how to watch Thursdays at 8 p.m. with Curtis McMurtry on Instagram and Facebook, all right? I want to thank Diana for doing the show, and I want to thank Curtis for setting it up, man. Thanks a lot. I really, really, really am very inspired by this record, and hopefully you will be too. Gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out DianaBurgessMusic.com, you can find us wherever it is you stream and download podcasts, be it Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Overcast, TuneIn. We're there. New shows all the time. 3 shows a week for the month of March. We're going back to our 2-day-a-week schedule for April because I need to go back to the regular schedule. That's basically why. Not that I don't enjoy doing it. I've just been pedal to the metal with this thing for a whole year, and I'm ready to sort of like ease back into the pre-COVID schedule, 2 shows a week. Maybe start bringing back some of From the Vault. I'm putting out so many new shows, I can't even put out From the Vault episodes. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. And let's hear some more music from Diana Burgess. Let's get down. It's a long way to fall if you're looking up, but you found some peace. Down to the place where you feel. It's a long